Activist Radio is on the air. You've tuned into the Mark Harrington Show, sponsored by Created Equal. Mark is training a new generation of leaders to take on the culture of death and win.
You don't like abortion, don't have one.
The only thing that can be said to be objective truth is that there is no objective truth.
It does come out in one piece. It comes out in one piece.
I would argue that we certainly are not all created equal.
And now, here's Mark.
Mark Harrington Show, live from the Created Equal Studios here in Columbus, Ohio. Thank you for joining us. I think this is about our fourth or fifth program. Last week, we came to you live from the University of Cincinnati, talking about how abortion imagery, at least in the country of Australia, is actually being banned by the Supreme Court there, and the implications of abortion imagery in the ministry that we do here at Created Equal. So if you're new to the program, we stream this program live, 1 p.m. every week, every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on these social media platforms. Obviously, my Facebook page, the Created Equal Facebook page, and then the other social media platforms. You can watch the program live at 1 p.m. Eastern Time every single week, as well as the podcast. You can listen to the program, the audio, the MP3, the sound, if you will, on your mobile device 24/7 here on the iTunes and Podbeam. You can pick up the podcast. And so we convert the video, obviously. We make the sound available to you, so you can stay up with your radio activist anytime, 24/7. So we appreciate you joining us today. We've got a big event coming up on Monday night. That is the debate that's going to be happening at Purdue University with my good friend and colleague Seth Dreher, who's with me in studio today. He is our director of training here at Create Equal. He is going to be debating Dr. David Sanders at Purdue University. Dr. Sanders will obviously take the position that abortion is not a moral injustice, and Seth will be taking the position that it is. And that'll be a debate that'll be held at Purdue University, 7 p.m. Monday night. If you're in the area of Lafayette or West Lafayette, Indiana, you can make your way to Fournay Hall. That's G140. That's the room at Purdue University, 7 p.m. If you want to be in person for the debate, or we will be streaming it live here on Facebook and the other media platforms as well. So mark your calendar for that debate. And we wanted to today, take a minute here today to kind of give our viewers a preview of what they might expect to see on Monday night. A little primer, if you will, a little opportunity to hear from Seth what might be taking place on Monday night, to give you guys a little insight to what might be happening. Purdue is a place where we have debated before. Seth was there in 2014 debating a professor by the name of Dr. Ralph Webb, who was a communications director, our professor there at Purdue. And as you can see, we had a huge crowd that night. That was before the days of Facebook Live, even though we were able to stream it that day. We had like 350 viewers. Back then, that was a lot. We're hoping for thousands, tens of thousands on Monday night that'll be able to watch it nationally on Facebook and other media platforms. But Seth debated Dr. Webb at Purdue in 2014. He's returning to Purdue this time to debate Dr. David Sanders. What I wanted to do here for a moment is just go back in time. Take a minute and go back in time and play a couple of media clips real quickly about that share with our viewers that debate with Seth and Dr. David Webb. So if you would, Mr. Producer, cue up that next video. This is a clip where Seth asks Dr. Webb if all humans are persons. Go ahead with the clip.
And do you think all human beings are persons?
All human beings are persons, yes.
Where do you, how would you define a person?
In the way I've been talking about it here, a person is some living organism with a sense of consciousness, a sense of personness.
Okay.
Established at the point of conception, established somewhere along the line.
All right. So that's Dr. Webb in 2014. And Seth, what I want to do is just turn to you here. Dr. Webb was asked by yourself whether all humans are persons. He went on to say that they were, but he kind of defined that as a living organism sometime after conception when they gain consciousness. That was his line, I guess, where he drew as to when they become persons. Is not this the quintessential question that we face when we are debating abortion, whether human beings are persons, or is it not?
You're exactly right, Mark. This is the central question, and it's not new, as you and I know, to our country or to the world, really, this question of whether all humans, by definition, are persons. Now, Dr. Webb seemingly said, yes, all humans are persons, but then pivoted by saying, well, no, not really, only humans who, unfortunately, are like him, having right. consciousness.
So when we think about this upcoming debate with Dr. Sanders, what do you expect? And then I'm going to go back to this Dr. Webb interview or this Dr. Webb debate a little bit. But what do you expect to be the main crux of the argument coming from Dr. Sanders based on what you know of him? Which, by the way, we don't know a whole lot about him. But what do you expect to hear from him? Is it the same old stuff that the preborn aren't human, therefore abortion should be a woman's choice or what?
Well, we know that Dr. Sanders is a professor of biology, so I wouldn't expect the same type of pivoting, I would expect him to recognize the fact that life begins at fertilization, mm-hmm. but I would expect very possibly the same philosophical debate about whether all humans matter. And we do know that Dr. Sanders, the only quote we have is that he has said that men telling women what to do with their bodies is an injustice. But you and I know this begs the question.
Right.
What happens in abortion? Are women operating on their bodies or on someone else's body?
Right. So you're probably not going to hear anything new this time around. I imagine you've heard it all. And the reason why is because we spend a lot of time on college campuses, so we get everything thrown at us all the time. So let's do this. Let's play another clip from Dr. Webb. This was, again, 2014, Purdue University. Dr. Ralph Webb from the Communications Department, a professor, debating our own Seth Dreher, Director of Training. And the question here is Seth is trying to pin him down as to whether he believes in moral absolutes, whether there's right and wrong, or whether he believes that all morality is relative. And so here's the question that Seth posed Dr. Webb in 2014.
Okay, transitioning again, would you agree that some things are true for all peoples all times, like sex trafficking is wrong? Is that true for all peoples all times or only some cultures?
Some cultures.
So some things like sex trafficking could be moral in certain cultures.
That is exactly right.
Is sexism moral in some cultures?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so is there anything in your view that is objectively true when it comes to morals?
I think there are various arenas of thought relative to morality, not just justice. That's one issue of morality that needs to be debated and resolved. But there are other domains of concern.
All right, well, let's just stop it there. So here we go. Here's Dr. Webb asking, you asked the question whether... you try to pin him down, asking him whether sex trafficking is moral in some cultures. And shockingly, I guess maybe not shockingly anymore, he said that no, we can't make that declarative statement that sex trafficking is going to be immoral for all cultures. He said there are different arenas of thought when it comes to morality and justice. Isn't this the question that we're really getting to, is whether there is a right and wrong and where we can derive that from? Isn't that what's going to be at the heart of some of the debate that you're going to have on Monday night?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if there is no objective morality, how can we say that it's wrong to have sex trafficking, or it's wrong to wrong for men to beat their spouses, or wrong for parents to abuse their children? Right. Without an objective grounding for morality, you can't condemn any action.
Well, certainly that's going to be one of the questions. Now, let's. What I want to do now is just kind of project forward, because I think we're going to know. We kind of know what we're going to be facing here, and I want, for the sake of the viewers, to give a little bit of a taste of some of the answers that Seth would give if, say, I were Dr. Sanders, asking the questions that pro-choice people ask all the time. And you know, there are a few of those that we know they're going to be asked during the debate. The first one is this, and the classic pro-choice argument, right, for now 45 years, is my body, my rights, my choice. A woman says she has a right to her own body, to the autonomy, that is, control of her own body, and nobody else can tell her what to do with her own body. This is the bodily autonomy argument, the historic and classic pro-choice, you know, viewpoint. And I'm sure that's going to come out front and center. That'll probably be right out front by Dr. Sanders saying that that's basically the standard position of the pro-choice movement. How would you answer the bodily autonomy question if asked on Monday night?
I think I'd begin by saying that I think we agree that women should have the rights to do what they want with their bodies. But again, right, we're begging the question. Mm-hmm. This is not about getting a tattoo or how you cut your hair. What happens in abortion? We know that a distinct, living, whole human being comes into existence at fertilization. Abortion decapitates, dismembers, disembowels that human, and so that is why it is wrong. So, of course, we're not debating whether she should have the... For example, I have a right to swing my arm, but I don't have a right to swing my arm and hit you in the face, because my rights to my body end when I harm another human. So what's happening in abortion? We are killing an innocent human. This is not really about bodily autonomy. It's about, do women have the rights to kill another person?
Right, and of course he's going to challenge you and say that they aren't persons. He's
sure.
going to say that they're mm-hmm. not human or whatever. He may assent to the idea that they're humans mm-hmm. in the biological sense. I mean, he is a biology professor, right? So
yes.
Hopefully he's not going to deny that obvious truth. But he may assent to that and say that they are human. They just don't deserve rights of personhood as we understand it under the 14th Amendment of our U.S. Constitution, and that the idea that they are persons is absurd, mm-hmm. And that a woman should have a right to choose. How would you deal with that question right there?
Well, first I'd frame and say again, that's not new. British common law as recent as 1876 said women were not persons when it came to rights and privileges, and I think we reject that because we know women, as humans, are persons. So we have to ask, is there a morally relevant difference between pre-born humans and
right.
born humans that justifies stripping their rights? And you and I know, no, there are no morally relevant differences. There are four. They're smaller size. They're less developed in a very different environment and more dependent upon their mothers. But those differences are irrelevant when it comes to human value, because infants are smaller than you and I. They're less developed than we are. They're at home. They're not here in the studio today. And they're much more dependent upon their mothers and fathers than us. But infants are no less persons than us. So really there's no morally relevant difference that justifies stripping the rights of personhood from these young people.
You know, Dr. Webb mentioned consciousness, where mm-hmm. he drew the line. We often refer to that as sentience or just self-awareness. Mm-hmm. I suspect that Dr. Sanders will also draw the line there. I mean, that's kind of the classic position now of most pro-choice people, that they believe somewhere along the way that when a human being is conscious of their aware of their surroundings, they know they had a history, they know they exist, at that point we can draw the line. How would you answer that question if he said that maybe we can draw the line here at sentience or consciousness?
Well, there's a couple of things there that are important to note. For one, it's a merely arbitrary selection of some quality of a person. Our good friend Scott Klusendorf often says, why not say having an innie belly button versus an outie belly button, something very arbitrary. We recognize
yeah.
that's a silly quality.
Right.
But what Dr. Sanders has done, perhaps what he might do, by if he would say that, what Dr. Webb did do, is the same thing. He said you have to have something I have. You have to be like me, be conscious like me, which is no less arbitrary and, frankly, prejudice. But another big problem is if you choose a quality like, let's say, consciousness and make that the benchmark for value, what happens to the rest of us? We all vary in our level of consciousness. This morning, you know, I had a good cup of coffee. Maybe it's, maybe right now I'm getting tired and losing my consciousness. Have I lost my personhood? If that quality gives you personhood, then yes, I have lost some of it. So the only way to ground a true equality is to say all humans by definition are persons merely by being human.
Right, right. So one of the things that I think is very obvious about the debate, if you show the poster that we have, Dylan, it shows that the debate will be between two men. And there's been a lot of talk about, oh, what are two men debating abortion for? I mean, why is that? They have nothing. They should have no voice on this issue. At least you're hearing that from the pro-choice side. It's interesting. Well, their debater's a man, too. So I guess it can't have it both ways. But I'm certain they're going to have it, during the Q&A, Seth, I imagine when you allow students to come up, there'll be plenty that'll say that two men should not be debating abortion. How do you deal with that question, the ad hominem, that is the attack on the man, if you will, in this case truly a man, I guess, unless you believe that you know, gender is fluid, which, of course, many in the audience apparently will. But anyway, two men debating abortion, how will you handle that on Monday night?
Well, that's
because you know that one's going to be
it'll come up. Your point is well made. Actually, we're not supposed to assume gender anymore. So I find
that's
it interesting they have assumed my gender and that of Dr. Sanders
right.
as well. But no, it's a very important point. And, you know, another friend of ours, Francis Beckwith, has said that arguments don't have genders. People have genders.
Right.
So what matters is not who's speaking, whether he's white or black or male or female. What is the message? Right. Is there good evidence or not? Mm-hmm. But another interesting point, which I remember we talked about years ago on campus, you were sharing this with me, that if we think that men should have no position on abortion, what do we do with Roe versus Wade?
Yeah.
It was decided by nine men, not
nine
a single
men.
Woman on the court.
No. Nope.
But of course they say, well, that's okay because those were pro-choice men. So really they're saying any man who is pro-choice can speak, but not a man who opposes abortion.
No, I know that you're not denying that, and no one would deny that women are disproportionately affected by abortion. Obviously, they're the ones that are made in the image of God to create the and carry the child. Mm-hmm. We're not denying that. Obviously, but the arguments stand or fall based on their logic, and so I think, you know, you'll be able to dispel with that. I'm certain there'll be many feminists in the audience that'll be upset, but my question is, well, why didn't they put up a female then? apparently she had trouble finding
somebody.
Yeah, the
student group emailed many professors, female and male, and Dr. Sanders was the only one to agree after a long search. But I will also, on that same point, you remember years ago, you and I were at the University of South Florida, and I was doing open microphone, and someone said, sit down, you're a man. So I gave it to our colleague, Jamie Beer.
Right.
They said, sit down, you're a Christian. They want anything they can do. They're looking for any way to discount what you're saying.
Yeah, the ad hominem. Hopefully Dr. Sanders won't go that direction, but you never know. All right, you're listening to your radio activist here on the Mark Harrington Show. Again, we're talking about Monday night's debate that's going to happen at the university Purdue University. 7 p.m. at Fournay Hall, G140 is the room, the lecture hall there. Also, we'll be streaming it live on all these media platforms, so you can listen to and watch the program, the debate live on Facebook and on all the other media platforms that we'll be streaming it. So mark your calendar again, the 24th, that's the upcoming Monday here, April 24th at Purdue. And my guest here is Seth Dreher, my colleague and friend from Created Equal, who will be debating Dr. David Sanders. So, Seth, let's continue on in the last 10 minutes of the program talking about what we might expect there in Purdue. You know, we have the classic cases. What about rape? What about rape? What about incest? What about life of the mother? What about these ones that might threaten the life of the mother? How could you force a woman to carry a pregnancy to term if that pregnancy was a result of rape or incest? Let's deal with that one right out of the block, because you know that is the class. I mean, no matter where you are debating abortion, that's almost the first one you hear from an abortion advocate. So how would you handle that one?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, we often would comment that we do know that abortion following rape is a sheer minority of abortions, but that even so, knowing it's less than 1%, even so, there are those women pursuing abortion after rape. And I think what we are asked when someone poses that question is, really they're asking, when born humans are in unimaginably difficult situations, is it permissible for them to kill someone else who did not cause the crime? I think when you frame it that way, you see the problem here. The man who did the crime, if a man rapes a woman, he may get a few years in jail, and we give capital punishment to the child. Right. This doesn't follow, or should not follow. Really what makes sense is that he is punished, but we're not guilty of the sins of our fathers, as born humans are, and neither should pre-born humans bear the punishment for their father's crime. So what we need is a real solution. The baby's not the problem. The problem is the crime happened. The problem is what the man did. We should deal with that, and we should help the mother in whatever way that we can, and not merely say, you know what, it's easy, just carry to term, go for adoption. Help her find real solutions. She can parent. She certainly could pursue adoption. Those are ethical ways to deal with this very difficult situation. But killing that child is no less ethical than you finding a baby on your doorstep you didn't ask to be there and killing that child because he is there.
So here's going to be a rapid-fire attempt to, you know, we're going to shoot a few at you here. There'll be people in the audience during the Q&A, and maybe Dr. Sanders will bring this up, that abortion should remain safe, legal, and rare. What is your response to that? Because as an abortion advocate, I assume, or as a pro-lifer, sorry, I assume that your goal is to make it illegal. And if it's going to make it illegal, that's going to make it unsafe for women to commit.
My simple question is, why rare? Why should abortion be rare? If this is a moral good, as Katha Paulet says in her book Pro, something that helps women, why should it be rare? What he has admitted there's something wrong with abortion. I'd want to know what that is. And if he says it should be rare because women shouldn't kill their children, I would say, well, correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying that it should be safe, legal, and rare to kill children.
To kill children. But what about the issue of you wanting to make it illegal? You want to outlaw abortion, and you want to send women back to the back alleys with coat hangers.
Well, this back alley coat hanger rhetoric is simply not true. In the American Journal of Public Health, in that journal, Mary Calderon, then medical director of Planned Parenthood, said that in the 1960s, prior to Roe v. Wade, most abortions were safe. She said 90% of abortions were being performed by doctors in good standing in their communities, not men hiding with coat hangers. In fact, the U.S. Bureau of Vital Statistics say 39 women died in 1972, the year before Roe v. Wade. Now, that's 39 tragedies. I certainly admit that. But it's not this thousands dying by the back alley coat hanger abortions like we hear.
Right.
But even so, I would say if a law makes it dangerous for some humans to kill other humans, is that by definition a bad law? I don't think so.
Right. So it goes back to the foundational question of whether they're human or not and whether they deserve equal rights, equal justice as the born. And that is the whole premise of our position here at Created Equal, that we're all made in the image of God, that we deserve equal treatment, equal rights as the born and others that have been discriminated against throughout history. I'm certain you're going to hear this one too, probably, Seth. Now, maybe I'll be wrong, but he's going to say, well, you're a religious person, a Christian, therefore you hold to the Bible, and you know, the Bible says abortion's murder, supposedly, and you're just an extremist trying to force your religious dogma down the throats of those who disagree with you. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think that people, if they watch that evening, and Dr. Sanders will see, my case against abortion is not theologically based. I do share my faith in another place. I think that my faith is very important to explain that there is forgiveness for those who've had abortions. You don't need to be a Christian to oppose abortion.
But you don't deny that the Bible does address it.
Oh, certainly.
And will you address that in...
I am not ashamed to say that there are two questions here. The first one is, scientifically, is the preborn human? The second question, do they have value? Yes, that comes from philosophy, religion. And the Bible is very clear here that all men are made in God's image, not merely those who are male, those who are born, those who are white, those who are black. All humans are made in God's image. I'm not embarrassed to say that the Christian God, the Christian Bible, espouses equality. Right. And I think it would be very interesting to see what Dr. Sanders would say in response to that. But whether they're human, that is, of course, a scientific question. So two questions. Are they human? Second, do they matter? Biblically, yes, they do. But even those who aren't believers, I hope, can support a view of equality.
Right. Well, hopefully so. I mean, our Declaration of Independence sets it out for us that we were all made, you know, created equal and endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and the first one listed was the right to life. Mm-hmm. Here's another one for you, Seth. What are you going to do? Let's say you get your way, and abortion's outlawed. What are you going to do with all these unwanted children? Are you going to adopt them?
Well,
how many have you adopted, by the way?
I mean, okay, that's a fantastic
if
question.
You adopt 100 of them, I'll maybe... No,
well, I do
it usually
ask,
doesn't matter how
it
many.
It doesn't matter. Ask how many could I adopt that this would satisfy your question. The answer is really, you can't. But I do think it's important to note here that there are many people who do want to adopt children. The ones that are hard to adopt to be adopted are those who are older, not babies. Babies are easily adopted in America, and there are waiting lists of those who want to adopt
but
them.
But the fosterware system is broken, the adoption system's broken. What are you going to do with all these unwanted children?
I would say we need to, what does a civil society do? We look for real solutions, which would include hopefully foster care reform, welfare reform, ways to help people. But the same question was posed to Abraham Lincoln when he was considering abolishing slavery. What are we going to do with all these slaves that are unleashed upon America?
Right.
We know Reconstruction was not easy. The civil rights movement was a hard-fought battle for equality, but it was still right to abolish slavery because innocent humans should not be enslaved or killed.
And certainly that's the issue, right? I mean, the answer is not killing them. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be anyway. Of course, they may disagree with the idea that you are
killed.
Actually killing
sure.
them. But, I mean, anyway, the answer is not killing them. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be anyway.
I hear something going on in my ear there.
Okay. All right. So what else, Seth? Here we are. Okay. We never talked about, you know, what is the, I guess, the big question. What is the case... If you would, mm-hmm. we've got about 3 minutes left. What is the case against abortion in about 2 minutes that you can give to our listeners and viewers here that they can take home, you know, in their toolkit the next time this is brought up, whether they're in, you know, some kind of whatever environment, public environment, someone brings up this issue within, you know, a minute or two, if you could concisely communicate your pro-life position. If you could leave them with that, I think that would be a good way to finish the program.
Yeah, that's a really important point. The case against abortion is really pretty logically clear. First, we have a premise. It is wrong to intentionally kill innocent humans. And I think we all agree upon this. We see news stories of innocent humans being killed intentionally. We're offended by that. That's the first point. It is wrong to do that. Secondly, elective abortion does intentionally kill innocent humans. This is pretty clear from the science of human embryology. The data is clear that from the beginning stages of her existence, an embryo is a human being, a distinct living whole human. And the procedures of abortion themselves make it very clear that that human is killed. When you suck her through a small tube and rip her flesh apart, she dies. When you dismember her piece by forceps, she dies. So again, first, it is wrong to intentionally kill innocent humans. Okay. Number two, abortion does do that. Therefore, we conclude abortion is wrong. And that really is the basic case. Now, you could go deeper by saying, well, again, someone might challenge you saying they're not persons. And again, you can say there are only four differences between preborn and born: their size, their lower level of development, their different environment inside the mother, and their greater degree of dependency compared to born humans. But we know those four differences are irrelevant when it comes to human value, because really, just Mark, you and me, we vary in those ways as well. I'm shorter than you are. Level development, we are different ages, environment, you and I live in different homes, and we have different degrees of dependency upon others. But we're equal humans, equal persons.
So do that again. So give them the basic syllogism and the SLED acronym in about 1 minute.
Can do that. Okay, number one, it is wrong to intentionally kill innocent humans. Two, elective abortion does intentionally kill innocent humans. Three, therefore, abortion is wrong. That's a simple case. Now, how we know that those humans have, there's no morally relevant difference between them and us that justifies killing them and not us, is that the only four differences are the acronym SLED: size, level development, environment, and dependency. And we know those four differences are irrelevant because any newborn and anyone watching today differs in those same four ways. But newborns are equal persons to those who are watching the show today because we know those differences are irrelevant. What's really happening here is a prejudice. We are killing babies at 3 months old for reasons we'd never kill babies 3 months after birth. That's ageism because they're younger.
It's discrimination, no doubt, based on the fact that they're younger than us. And bigotry. I mean, yes. If you want to boil it down, I mean, we don't want to go around calling people bigots. It sounds pejorative, but the truth of the matter is they are. they really are. I mean, those who think that the preborn can be killed simply because they're younger. All right, so you've been listening to your radio activist here on The Mark Harrington Show, your voice of resistance. I've been talking to my good friend Seth Dreher today, director of training at Created Equal. And folks, hopefully you've got a little bit of a preview into what will be happening Monday night, 7 p.m. at Purdue University. If you're in the West Lafayette area in Indiana, I exhort you to come out and support Seth by attending the debate in person. It'll be at Fournay Hall, G140, Purdue University at 7 p.m. on April 24th. Also, if you want to watch the program, the debate live, you can do that by tuning in to the Created Equal Facebook page here, also on my personal Facebook page, and all these other media platforms that we will have set up for the live debate for you to be able to watch here on Facebook. So, folks, if you would, please mark your calendar again, 7 p.m., April 24th, debate between Seth Dreher, pro-life activist and director of training at Created Equal, and Dr. David Sanders, professor at Purdue University. We'll see you then, 7 p.m., right here on Facebook. God bless you, God bless America, and remember, America, to bless God.
You've been listening to Mark Harrington, your radio activist. For more information on how to become a witness against the evil plague in America, call Created Equal at 614-269-7808, 614-269-7808, or go online to createdequal.net. Createdequal.net. Be sure to tune to The Mark Harrington Show next time for your marching orders in the culture war.